Hello, everyone. Welcome to Spoiler Alert, a weekly talk radio show for movie and television lovers. February is Black History Month, a time to focus attention on the many contributions of Black people to society. And for this show, we're focusing on the achievements of Black filmmakers, actors, and talent, both in front of and behind the screen. But I cannot do it alone. I'm going to do the right thing and introduce my co-hosts, Sonia Stanger and Jeremy Lequi. Nice. Hi, guys.
Thank Hello. You, friend. Hi.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm over here and you're over there.
I know.
Oh. I love that for us.
Both sides now.
I'm over here.
Look at us. You're and she's over there.
And there she is.
Here I am.
We're live in studio.
It excites us every time.
It does. It's shocking every time.
Shocking.
But also
I'm shocked.
Completely fine. Shocked. You guys,
yo,
let's talk about filmmaking.
Yay. Woo! We love to.
Because yeah, that's our show.
That's...
Why is that an important aspect of Black History Month? What do you think?
This is a good question. You sent us this and I was like, this is a good question. I was thinking about how important film and like audiovisual media is in our current culture and just how that's like kind of, honestly, I think the predominant like way we engage with stories, most of us now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
And so it's important to, yeah, like, examine whose stories we're engaging with, who's telling those stories, how they're being told. And, like, film, I think especially, is such a specifically, I don't know, such a, like, powerful site of and, like, perpetuator of, like, white supremacy culture, mm-hmm. which... Another thing I was thinking about for this show is, like, that tension between the need to address that and not wanting to center that in Black History Month when it's, like, even Black History Month, I think, becomes about whiteness so much of the time. And, like, we get into this place of, like, centering whiteness and, like, white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously not the whole point at all.
Right.
It's literally the damn opposite.
It's, exactly. And so, but I do think that that's, like, part of why it's important is, like, empowering Black voices, Black storytelling, Black films mm-hmm. within this particular industry that we have a show about.
Yes, absolutely.
It's true. I think also, like, there is kind of a, at least from our North American perspective, a very much like, movies are a big deal.
Yeah.
Like that's just a thing that we live in.
Ooh, you got a movie made.
Ooh, fancy movie. And so I do think it is kind of a legitimizing thing. But also I was just kind of thinking about timing in terms of like, you know, like it is sort of like the thing that was the most active and kind of, I don't want to say accessible because it was still very expensive in the 50s and stuff, but now more than ever. But it is just sort of this thing of like, that is the medium you grab because mm-hmm. of its prominence and access, right?
Yeah.
And it is sort of that whole thing that, like, if you say to someone, oh, I'm making a movie, like, there's no, like, you can follow up what that thing is about. But it is just, like, such a prominent medium, like you were saying, Sanj. And I just think it was the prominent medium at the time.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
Because, like, you know, a little boy such as I, growing up in a really small town, like, there was no Black people in my town. But I could trot on down to my local store and rent Waiting to Exhale and become obsessed with those women. And it was just like, yeah, it's just a very affirming sort of way to wrap your head around society in a way that you would never get to.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that film does a good job of exposing things to outsiders.
Yeah.
Right? And there's always like... There's different sort of like, I don't want to say critiques, issues, things that come up, problems people have with particular types of literature.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's easier to access those thoughts and ideas through film.
Yeah.
Usually.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking a similar thing that like, it's such a like personal and intimate medium in some ways where like, you know, like you can have extreme close-ups. You can like kind of, you're seeing and hearing, you know, really personal things sometimes, and that I think can be really valuable for telling like rich and complex stories of the kind you need to adequately celebrate a whole group of people, you know.
Of which is a tall dang order.
Yeah, like it's this weird thing of like, I don't know, the like categorization, the like putting people in boxes, but also you kind of have to do that sometimes in terms of like looking at specific experiences.
To get something made, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess this is kind of piggybacking, but so why would representation be important on film? What possible use is that?
Yeah. I mean, this one is also tricky for me because it's like, I think we've fallen into a trap that I think we're maybe starting to move past now, where representation was the start and end of the conversation mm-hmm. about some of this stuff, that then you get into a place of like tokenism and like kind of like diversity quotas or this, it
box
becomes
checking.
Very like rote. Yeah, box like, checking.
There's a best friend and
yeah,
she's black.
Exactly, yeah.
What more do you want from me?
Yeah.
We did the thing.
Yeah. And so, like, representation is important, but for me, it's like we can't stop at sort of a really basic look at representation, and we have to be really mindful in, like, how we're approaching it and, like, what the goal is and what kind of representation are we talking about. But I think, like, the ultimate thing of why it's important is what stories get told and how, and, like, who gets to see themselves. And, I mean, not even just themselves. Like, I think that's a really big piece of it. But, like, who do we all get to see and learn about and mm-hmm. see as important and center? That's part of it for me.
Well, and I do think, like, very much echoing what Song just said, it is the whole, we kind of thought representation meant this thing, and we did that, and then we thought we were okay. But actually, representation means allowing people to tell their stories.
Yeah.
And then we're kind of at a point now, which I think has come up in a whole bunch of different ways, where like actually seeing those other perspectives is so engaging because the norm is so lame.
Yeah.
Right? Like the big example is Sorry to Bother You, of course.
Yeah.
Just because
love Sorry to Bother
it's
You.
So crazy. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and it is like just trying to drive home a very different point that I don't think other people would feel comfortable with through like a white lens.
Yeah.
You know, like that same story looks very different if someone else is telling it versus someone who knows it intimately.
Yeah.
And that's always been the case. And there's always the whole thing of like, that means there's not room for both. There is room for both.
Right.
We just want both.
Yeah.
Well, I just want both of the things. And I don't know why one might not mean the other or something stupid like that.
Yeah. But our culture of like being obsessed with binaries and like diametric opposites is so silly. Because it's, yeah, it's why not both?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, no one is saying that you as a white person, like, should never have characters of color.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, mm-hmm. that, like, you can't write those characters at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, how you're doing it and that you should not be the only one who gets to do it. And it's, mm-hmm. yeah.
Right. Yeah. When that becomes the exclusive text,
yeah.
then it becomes problematic because then, you know, if someone makes a documentary about violence in Harlem, like that's a totally okay thing to make a documentary about for anyone, but we should be able to get all the perspectives of that that people want to express.
Yeah. Well, and so, like, what is your relationship as the filmmaker to that? Like, are you engaging with that on a human level where you're like connecting with the people who are affected and, you know, growing as a person through that? Or are you
just
this like weird
on the outside,
yeah, like exploitative yeah. voyeur who's just like, let me make this trauma porn film with my limited perspective, which unfortunately is so pervasive, I think, kind of
right.
still.
It's, but like, yeah, I think that's okay. It just can't be the only thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I feel like it's necessary to see the interiority of like your character. They can't just be like a boop boop, like a sassy little line and they're out. It
yeah,
has to
yeah,
be like, we have to see their complicated like inner workings.
Well, full mm-hmm. humanity.
Full humanity.
Yeah. Not just the stereotypes.
How do you guys feel about the space that black film occupies at this point in time?
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of what I was alluding to earlier. Like, I do feel like we're finally, I mean, like, let's name it, thanks to the labor and activism of so many countless black artists and activists for so many years to just get us to this point of, like, just getting beyond that, like, surface representation and stereotypes, and that's not across the board, like, those things are still here,
mm-hmm.
but that anything beyond that exists, I think, has taken a lot of work and time. You know, like, there are more folks in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
There are more stories getting told. There are more people getting to tell their own stories. And at the same time, I do think we're in this period of, like, this intensifying of the kind of, like, conglomeration of, like, the film industry, like, kind of the Disney, mm-hmm. the Disneyfication, the, like, big studios kind of being so dominant, which is toxic and I think, like, stifles some of the richness.
I think I'm going to jump in.
Yeah, Sanj.
I think it's the whole, like, Black Panther of it all.
I was going to say, do you feel like it's the money-making of it all, too?
Well, so, like, the climate now, as far as I see it, is that low-end things are getting to be, like, so many, right? Like, there's so many ways for people to make small films easily with high quality, quickly, for no money, versus, like, the very few, I don't know,
blockbustery,
huge things. And I kind of feel like Black Panther was this moment where it's like, oh, we're going to celebrate this and we're finally going to do it. And it's like here and we're, you know, and a lot of people thought like we did it. But then I think if you zoom out, we kind of just did the thing again.
Yeah.
Where like they have their two movies. It's cool. You know, like, and we're sort of like just like corralling things back into kind of the way the model was before, where like it's now not the token character, it's the token movie. And mm-hmm. we just did it, you know. So I don't know. It's the whole thing just seems kind of like, well, honestly, it just seems kind of dumb.
Yeah,
and
I fear capitalism.
I fear
it strikes
so
again.
But I am so hopeful for like things being made cheap and emotionally, and like not worried about catering and all of those sorts of things. And I don't even. That's kind of just everything.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I do think there's somewhat, I'm being so careful not to overgeneralize, but like somewhat less of that fear or like need to cater in some ways. Like I think, you know, Black Panther is an interesting example of like there was this narrative for so long of, well, black stories won't make money at the box office,
right.
which is absurd.
It's crazy.
And I think statistically, actually, like, I think I read once that like black moviegoers actually spend more at theaters.
I think anything that's like suppressed whenever there is a happening of it,
yeah.
it does is a bigger blip, right?
Like, yeah.
And a part of it is like it has to be good enough to like reach over that, I'm using air quotes, bar.
Yeah.
And the other part is like it's just few and far in between.
Mm-hmm.
So, but
well, and I think that flip side of people realizing like, oh, there is a lot of money to be made here, is that then you get to that place of like the exploitation again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where then like it's this like this profit driven seeking out of quote unquote black stories, which isn't necessarily in service of like liberation or like equity or people's voices being heard. So mm-hmm. tricky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any, like, this is off, but do you have any examples of like something like that that's like a little more profit driven and not? I really put you on the spot. I know.
No, that's okay.
Like a more profit driven, like,
and without giving it sort of an interiority. I don't know.
I feel like there have been a lot of like black action-y movies that have come out that do have the sort of very much like white treatment to them, where they've just mad-libbed Captain America and put in, was it Harriet Tubman? Was that one of the, I haven't watched
Harriet,
this.
There was a movie of her.
Yes, but it seems.
She Captain Marvel her way through?
Honestly, they did.
A little bit.
Kind of action. Like, I mean, and let's be clear, she was a badass.
Yes, like, yes. But it's just like that story is not being told with the right lens.
Yeah.
Right.
Metaphorically.
Yeah.
That is so wild.
Is that what it's called? I'm going to try and
it's
find
called, I think it's just called Harriet.
Or Tubman.
Or
it's one of the two.
It's going to be one of the two.
But, like, you should, like, in having this conversation, Sean, you already know the major plot points of the movie.
Oh, I 100%
history
see it.
And how they make these.
I was just imagining the action sequences, and it is making me laugh, actually.
Well, okay, to give an example. So for me, I guess I wasn't necessarily speaking to like a lack of interiority, and I don't want to use this example as a way to like take down this thing I'm talking about. The Color Purple,
the
new film that is the musical, to me, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to say like, this is that, this is only that. But there is a part of me that's like, I think that is, the fact that that exists is somewhat a reflection of that phenomenon.
That
of
they're
like
we
can
will,
profit from
we'll
this.
We'll make it because we know that the musical on Broadway makes tons of money. And will be a straight up money maker.
It's sort of this weird like justification, like going from this idea that like, oh, these things don't make money, to like exploiting them for a while, to actually getting to the point where it's like, oh no, it's just another movie, or it's just another show, or just another thing. Which I mean, kind of is the goal, right? Is to just have a piece of art accepted among other pieces of art, regardless of maker or perspective.
Yeah,
but it is just this like kind of really complicated thing once we add in the structures we have built. And like, I do think in 5 years from now, someone at the university, get ready for writing some sort of paper.
Okay.
But like, there is this whole thing about like shifting from the blockbuster, which kind of was just whatever they had, versus like the very curated experience of Netflix. And like, I have a hard time watching Netflix now, because I look at all the options and I don't want to watch any of the ones presented to me. Right? Like it's just like, oh, you watched this one movie this one time, but actually it was The Child, and so now it thinks I'm into whatever.
Do y'all have this thing where you see someone else's Netflix and you're like, this is a different Netflix than I have?
Well, yeah, and it literally shows you different like covers.
I'm like, this is a new thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know that we talk enough about the degree to which algorithms shape our reality.
I mean, it's
I know people talk about it, but I don't know if it's enough.
That's a good episode, algorithms.
Oof. Well, even like during this month, like a lot of streamers or like Netflix will be like
Black stories.
Like, and they will really curate you. Like, they just kind of know what people are like. Like, probably white people are like, I should take in a few black movies. And then they just put them all in one place. Yeah, literally us.
But this circles back to that issue again of, like, is Netflix helping? Or are they just, like, checking the box because it's that time of year, right?
Yeah. And it's just kind of making us feel better about ourselves.
Right.
Yeah.
If the only outcome is assuaging your white guilt, sorry, friends, you haven't grown.
Right.
Like, it's not just, and it's, again, it's not all, I was going to say black and white, pun intended.
Wow.
Like, you know, it can be both. Like, that can be the motivation, and then you learn something when you watch something.
Right.
It takes a long time to unpack this stuff and unlearn, but yeah. I worry that we've become complacent with, like, the most basic forms of this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that brings me into a next question. Are there some, like, certain genres or themes that always keep popping up?
Well, this seems like a good time to talk about Afrofuturism, which is a...
There's always a good time for that.
I mean, true. Yeah. What a beautiful genre.
All the futurisms.
Yeah. Which I found, I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to define this in a succinct way. So I wrote down the definition
you
I wanted.
You said ChatGPT? Tell me.
The Guardian's Ashley Clark says that the term Afrofuturism has an amorphous nature, but that Afrofuturist films are united by one key theme: the centering of the international black experience in alternate and imagined realities, whether fiction or documentary, past or present, science fiction or straight drama. So, you know, like Black Panther would be an Afrofuturist film. Sorry to Bother You would be. There are a lot of different ways that a film like can be. But I just think it's such a cool, like, I love Afrofuturist literature as well. And like, just, you know, some of the like imagery components of that genre, I think, are so like rich and beautiful, like drawing on a lot of different cultural influences. Like, just that that kind of like forward looking perspective that's inherent to it, which at the same time is like a backward looking perspective, like that linking of like past and future, I just think so cool and useful.
I think there are a lot of futurist movements happening right now, and I think it actually is like a very clever way to kind of like empathize with things. And there are a lot of like really weird and cool pieces of art coming out from like all these different kinds of places. Again, because access is like very open and things are cheaper and easier than they've ever been. And like with the AIs and whatnot, people are able to program when they weren't able to before. So they're able to just like engage with things in a more meaningful way. But there's lots of fun stuff out there.
Just as a small aside, are you guys familiar with the AI Willy Wonka room?
No.
No? Yes. I'm scared already.
I've been following this closely.
I saw it.
Basically, some like Glasgow like party place like made posters for like a $45 like Wonka experience and made a big AI poster of like how crazy it's going to look in there, like mushrooms and candy, and it's like looks insane. And then when they show up, it's like a big empty warehouse with like a poster on a wall and like a janky like sucker, and people like called the police because they were so mad. And
it was for children.
You say this was in Glasgow?
It was for children.
It was for children, yeah. And it was very disappointing. And
but Glasgow, you
yeah.
said? I would love to hear some Scottish people be mad about this. I'm going to go find that.
The images are great. There's a very funny one of a really bereft woman dressed as an Oompa Loompa, like in front of like a trying to.
The guy who played Oompa Willy Wonka has spoken out against, and he's just like, okay, here's what happened. I needed the money really bad. I told them it was a bad idea. They said there was going to be more. And then he was just like, the show must go on.
Yeah, I mean, it's not his fault.
Yeah, no. But anyway, AI really
incredible.
Really messed them up on that one.
Oh my gosh. It
promised too much.
I got my AI problems. Sean.
Yes.
Speaking of things that come up in themes.
Oh.
Themes, types of things.
Yes, please.
I will say that I do love a good blaxploitation movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
a thing
happened right after Spike Lee did it, and that's that there was sort of a bunch of movies made by black people that were blaxploitation. Like, they loved these movies.
Yeah.
So then they sort of spoofed them and remade them. And I like it so much, you guys.
Are we going to talk about Dolomite?
we certainly could talk about Dolomite because it's one of my favorite movies.
It's a prime example.
It is probably the core example. But something happens to me when I see a man with an afro do kung fu.
Yeah.
And
it affects us all.
As you should, and honestly.
Honestly, I think that might have been like an early Afrofuturism thing where they're sort of like maybe in a not cool way taking ownership of a thing they shouldn't have, but also like reinventing what could have been in terms of
like a cultural fusion,
you know. Yeah. And my favorite thing is always the juxtaposition of James Bond and Undercover Brother, which is just the best.
That's funny.
The best, most, because it's basically the same thing in broad strokes. However, it's definitely not.
Should have been a crossover.
Maybe.
That's fun.
But there should be more secret agents who can fight people for no reason and have to save the world and all these fun things.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see more.
Do y'all remember when we watched Blackenstein for Halloween?
Yes. The Halcyon days of war.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Any other genres or themes that you were thinking about?
Well, I mean, horror. Like, I think we've seen a lot of...
Horror's really had a comeuppance.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, I want to see that movie, The Blackening. I haven't seen it still, but it's sort of like a
I was trying... I looked for it many places. I couldn't find it this week.
It's like a satirical slasher fic, and the premise is like, who's going to die first because they're all black.
Yes, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Genius. And so, yeah, I think that, like, blending of horror and satire also, I think, has been pretty prominent. Like, obviously, Jordan Peele has done a lot there. And just satire in general also. Like, just that, I don't know, that kind of, like, black humor, dark humor. Black comedy is what I was going to say. Dark humor and black comedy. That's funny. I think there's like just been a lot of really good stuff in that kind of zone recently.
Well, and we are at the point where people are like, there are things that were maybe not great that they enjoyed that they are making versions of that they like, right?
Yeah, there is a bit of a reclamation
yes.
to some filmmaking like that.
And yeah. I think it's very fun and
yeah.
crazy. And I think,
I
like,
that.
Jordan Peele's a prime example of that because, like, he loves those movies. He loves them,
yeah.
right? And he studied them, and now he's, like, getting his own crack at it, so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sean's just like
yes.
deeply agreeing.
I was just like I don't know. I was just trying to think of his oeuvre. It's just so funny to think of him like in Key and Peele.
Yeah.
Is this the thing where every time we talk about it, you like I also just think of the sports montage.
I think of the sports montage a
every
lot.
Time.
It's really funny. Yeah, I just am like. I'm like, how many people are out here with, like, a bunch of great films under their belt that they're like, but I'm stuck. I'm doing this, like, weird sketch comedy, like, not that it's, like, a bad time, but it is, it's funny to think of his trajectory.
Right.
A renaissance man.
That's true. But it is the whole thing of, like, there just needs to be more possibilities for for people to express themselves because they're getting shut down before they even get seen.
Yeah.
Right.
Because we got some good ideas
right.
out here.
Yeah, Jordan Peele had to work a lifetime to be able to make his own first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's crazy. And everyone thought it was nuts because it was so different from what he did before, which, like, might be a thing for someone more established, but, like...
But also, yeah, like, it's that thing of, like, comedy and... horror aren't opposite. It's
oh
like,
yeah,
you know, like he like see. I feel like he exposes how it's both, which I think is so cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well, maybe we'll let listeners sit with that for a while, and we'll be back on 91.3 FM CJTR Regina Community Radio, tuned into the community. And we're back on 91.3 FM CJTR Regina Community Radio. We'll be back. Hilarious.
Oh, no.
We will be back talking black film.
That was not on purpose.
That was great.
Damn. After we play a little game, lovingly called The Game.
It's game time, people. For those who don't know, or if you're just tuning in, The Game is where I spend so much time this week looking for a title related to our topic that these two have hopefully not seen. I tell them the title. They tell me what they think it's about. I tell them what it's really about. We all have a great time. You guys ready to play the
game? Yep.
Yeah.
This week's title is Coffee. That title again, Coffee.
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 Okay. Mm-hmm.
You got something, Sean?
I think so. I think this is kind of a, this is a bit of a Get Out, me stealing from Get Out.
Get Out Shop.
It's a coffee shop.
Okay? Oh.
And all of the people that come in, it's a largely like... black audience that is frequents this coffee shop, and when they order it black, and they're like, "Yep, no problem." But if they don't order it black, then the next time they come in, they're a little weird. They're acting a little unlike themselves.
The milk.
and then one of the baristas, she is just like on a mission to figure out what is going on with this magical coffee shop. Terrifying.
And?
What is
going on?
I don't know what's going on.
Oh, a cliffhanger.
Do you think I'm going to give it all away?
My guess, vampires.
Yeah. Black vampires?
Yeah.
I feel like we never get to see black vampires, except for...
except for that
Blade,
Angela, for that one great... what was... No.
Was it freaking Ryan Murphy?
No, it wasn't Ryan Murphy. What? Angela Bassett is in it... And she's like a police officer. She's investigating.
What? I want to watch this. I
what?
Don't know.
I feel like.
And she's a vampire?
We've talked about this.
Well, she's like falling in love with a vampire.
Is this the vampire in Brooklyn?
Something about the Bronx?
Vampire in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Eddie Murphy.
Oh, yeah. Fun. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, well, I want to watch
yeah.
that.
Oh, yeah.
And she's great in it.
Oh, so good. That's such a good movie. And it's like. Kind of a comedy, but kind of not.
It's kind of serious.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of serious.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Are you done?
I'm done.
Okay. I just didn't want to
Sorry.
Cut you off.
No, please.
Okay, I think Coffee is about a like pretty well-off young American black woman who has like, you know, grown up maybe in like I don't know, Rhode Island or somewhere, and like, you know, always had like all white friends and had to go through like a lot of primarily white institutions, and has like a bit of an identity crisis about that. And then travels to Colombia and is like on a day trip, and she like stumbles into this like field, and it's a coffee mm-hmm. plantation, and she like gets to talking with some of the farmers there who are like Afro-Latinos, and yeah, just has a like self-exploration journey, and maybe like realizes some things, probably has to deal with some conflicts as she like goes home and is kind of like unpacking it all. Yeah, I think it's her story and her journey.
Eat, pray, coffee.
Oh, wow. Eat, drink, coffee.
Thank you, yes.
Thank you both very much for your thoughts on what coffee could be.
Okay. I feel like we're not right.
Okay.
happy to say you're both wrong in all ways, shapes, and forms.
Of course you're happy.
Coffee, I can only read the top part of the Wikipedia entry, not the rest of the synopsis.
Why are you not wearing your readers today? Grandpa?
No.
He didn't pay his $2 just to the fundraiser.
Some of the content might not be cool on the radio, yeah. Anyway, coffee, spelled C-O-F-F-Y. Is a 1973 American blaxploitation film written and directed by Jack Hall. The story is about a black female vigilante played by Pam Grier, named Coffee, who seeks violent revenge against a heroin dealer responsible for her sister's addiction. And
Pam.
Spoiler alert, at the end, she shoots a man's
mm-hmm. Yep, you don't have to say the rest.
Yeah.
Yep.
Coffee. Oh,
this coffee is served hot. Okay.
I will read what was on the poster to get Sean more entranced by this movie. The baddest one chick hit squad that ever hit town.
The baddest one hit.
One chick.
One hit, chick.
Hit squad.
Hit squad. It doesn't roll off the tongue, but.
But it's there.
The baddest like one it. Chick hit squad to ever hit town.
She just crushed it. Like, she just went through it like it was.
It's because Sonya wrote that.
She did write that.
I wish. Oh my God, that would mean I would have got to meet Pam Grier.
Oh, that would be so cool. You guys, the game was, of course, brought to you by the CJTR membership drive on now until Saturday, March 9th. Be a friend of community radio by buying a new membership or renewing your current membership today. As a member of CJTR, you receive benefits like programmer bidding rights, ability to join our board, exclusive giveaways, and more. Memberships start at only $30 a year with special 2, 3, and 5-year discounted rates. During the 2024 drives, members will receive special discounts, I can read, at a variety of events running during the month-long drive. Go to cjtr.ca to learn more about events happening through our membership drive and to purpose your membership today. You can also call CJTR at 306-525-7274 to learn more. I also was supposed to read this other cool thing that says, grab your BFF and join us at the CJTR Bestie Bowling Night during our 2024 membership drive.
Pins falling down sound effect.
Oh, that's on March 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the, I got to reach a thing to read it. Oh, I'm so sorry. At the Glen Caring Boulder Dome, and it's $50 a pair. Team discounts are available for CJTR members, so you can probably get your membership so you got a discount.
Yeah, do that.
But don't wait to sign up because spots may fill. Go to our website at cjtr.ca and check out the link on the 2024 membership drive.
Wow. And if you're a two chick hit squad, that's a great day.
That's
idea.
A deal.
That town's gonna get deal. Hit.
Oh,
you could do it.
Thank you guys for playing the game.
Thank you.
Thank you to all the members out there
mm-hmm.
and all the future members.
Exactly.
Okay.
This means you.
What did y'all watch this week? What did you get eyes on?
Well, I was very happy to watch a somewhat new film, actually, that is nominated for Best Picture, not to brag.
And why did you make it?
Yeah, that would be so
no big deal.
Not to brag on its behalf, but honestly, I will brag on its behalf because it's really good. Uh-huh. And that is American Fiction.
Yes, Mama.
Cord Jefferson, is that the director's name? His directorial debut, he smashed it. It's the adaptation of a 2001 novel called Erasure about an author played by Jeffrey Wright, who oh, what a guy. He really just, I love him.
It's true.
Who is frustrated by sort of his lack of recognition because he writes what he just sees as like straightforward literary fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's a scene where he, like, goes into a bookstore and becomes really upset because his book is filed under, like, African-American studies. And he's like, well, but it's not African-American studies. I'm just a black author. And his frustration with kind of the, like, honestly, like, blaxploitation literature, I would say.
Yeah.
The kind of, like, stereotypical books, like, trauma porn kind of books. Honestly, it did make me think a little bit of the novel Push by Sapphire.
Oh, 100%.
There's this up-and-coming young author played by Issa Rae, Sintara Gold.
Sintara Golden.
Such a good character name work, who has this, like, smash hit book. I think it's Wheeze Into Ghetto.
Wheeze Lives Into Ghetto.
Wheeze Lives Into Ghetto. So kind of that, like, that frustration about, like, stereotyping and that, like, you know, over-the-top language use. And then he, as a joke, writes this book called My Pathology, kind of in that same tone, under a pseudonym, and sends it to his editor, and it blows up. And so it's kind of about that whole situation and this question of stereotypes.
His simmering anger that his outlandish, like, black book is actually, like, the only thing that is getting recognition.
Yeah.
I watched this film this week, too. But this film also kind of sneaks in a different story as well.
Yes.
Because that is like the trailer story, and that's what I knew of it going into it. But then it also is like kind of a secret film about family dynamics and like sibling dynamics. Because he, as well as when this is going on, he goes to visit his hometown where his older sister, who is played by Tracy Ellis Ross, is like taking care of their ailing mother. And she is kind of frustrated with him and their insane little brother, played by a great performance by Sterling K. Brown, who is such a chaotic little brother character. And they just like how she always has to deal with things. And he, and just like the complicated dynamics that between all three of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really expect that, but I did like it because, you know, the parents be getting older and the sibling relationships. Yeah.
Well, it's tricky. I thought it was quite meta because it's this film about like kind of how, you know, too often media that centers black folks dehumanizes them and is stereotypical. And so to have this film that's, like, commenting that with this kind of second film within it that is so humanizing, so human, so relatable, so universal, and so, like there are all these moments of joy and, like, just, yeah, I don't know, really, like, rich and, like, emotional. I thought it was really cool. And it was almost like that sort of, like, A plot about, like, the book and everything.
Was, like, what gets you in the door.
Yeah, well, and, like, is, like, his book, like, is, like, My Pathology.
Yeah.
And then the, like, family story is, like, his other books.
Yeah, totally.
So it's cool how it's, like, both. Because also, I think the film is kind of arguing, like, to fully reject those other, like, black books that he's so angry about, which Sintara Golden, like, argues in the film.
Yeah.
She basically says, like, you can't just throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, there is still stuff in there that's useful and important, and there's, like, a reason people are connecting with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just, like, reject that wholesale. Anyway, I really liked it.
It was really, yeah, I also enjoyed it. And, yeah, it is, because I honestly don't know if I would have made a priority to go see a film about sort of complicated family dynamics, really. But I was intrigued to see what the trailer purported to me first.
Yeah.
So.
Well, because, yeah, it's just such a good premise.
Yeah.
And so funny.
There's a really funny part, too, where, so Issa Rae and Jeffrey Wright are on a jury awarding a book, and there's one that they do not want to win, and the three other white jurors outvote them and award the other book. as Issa and Jeffrey were both like, no, we definitely don't think this should win. And then they're like, award it. You got outvoted. And then they're like, it's really important to listen to black voices right now.
Yeah, there's
as they just sit in an awkward silence after that. It's so funny.
There's a lot of good, like, white supremacy lampooning that happens in this film. Like, there's, like, this really funny phone conversation he has with this, like, white book editor. It's just so hilarious.
What's his face from?
Yeah, from Only Murder in the Building.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just, it's, and, like, yeah, so many good performances as well.
Mm-hmm.
Smash it.
It does look good. I have not yet seen it.
Well, get to it, because I actually don't even know who's all nominated for Best Film this year.
Yeah, it is nominated for Best Film, and I think maybe Best Director, and I think Jeffrey Wright is nominated, and I think the writer, like, Best Screenplay also, like, Adapted Screenplay. Like, I think it got nominated for a whole bunch.
Okay.
So we love to see that, because Oscars are pretty white this year as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, not that it's a tick box, but, well, yeah.
Tick box.
Jen? So, yeah.
I watched a few things, and then I felt bad because I realized that the things I watched were not actually about Black history.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I should watch, like, an actual Black history something. And then halfway through, I was like, oh, what I watched was probably fine. But what I watched was really good, so it's all fine. From 2023, it's Rustin. Have you guys seen this?
Oh, not yet. It's
so
not on my list.
It's the biopic about, I got to look at his name when I say it, Bayard? Rustin, who in herein I will refer to as Rustin, but played by Coleman Domingo, and it sort of centers around the preparations for the 1963 March on Washington and all of the things that happen. This is produced by the Obamas.
Mm.
So,
okay.
It got moved up higher on the list. Anyway.
Just capital T, capital O, the Obamas.
I mean, yeah.
You know who I'm talking about, so it's fine. Anyway, it was really good. And for, like, the first 5 minutes, Coleman Domingo's performance was, like, kind of weird.
Mm.
And I was like, I don't know if I like if is he going to do this the whole time? It's almost like a caricature. But then I don't know if, like, it just grew on me or he's just very talented. But there's so many good one lines that Rustin says in this movie.
Mm.
And at one point, he gets, like, insulted and this fight's about to break out. And he ends it by getting in between the people and saying, it's Friday night and I've been called worse. And, like, that's how it ends. Anyway, the whole thing centers sort of around, like, the Black governance at the time with all the sort of, like, legal bodies and people of importance like Martin Luther King, and how there were just issues around him being gay. Mm. And so the movie opens with...
Not Martin Luther.
No, with with Rustin being gay.
Yeah.
There is a lot of revision of his legacy that happens this mm-hmm. month, MLK, so we won't add that.
But also, the big thing, so the movie opens with him having to sort of step out of his role because they're going to threaten and say that he and MLK are lovers.
Mm. Right.
And so he just resigns to kind of, like, he was doing it to, like, call a bluff, but then his resignation's accepted, and then he kind of, like, falls down the rabbit hole.
Damn.
Anyway, it is really good. It's just, like, a really well-done biopic. Chris Rock plays the villain, and he does a great job.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the, like, chair of the NAACP, mm. and he wants nothing to do with Rustin because of his sexual orientation. And, you know, eventually he kind of does come around and the whole thing's a rousing success because he is the man who sort of conceived it and then enacted it in sort of, like, all the meaningful big ways.
Yeah.
Anyway, it does just kind of, like, highlight a lot of the, like, tension that existed there, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Because we don't hear about infighting. Like, it's
right,
not a
it's
thing,
also
right? Like,
sanitized.
You know, and so it is like... It was a really interesting story from a really great perspective. And then you do kind of see, like, the, you know, the problem is that a lot of people are okay with things, but there's so much at stake that they don't want to jeopardize it by having, you know, different things
Bayern.
Go back and forth. It's true. It's true.
Coleman Domingo is having a moment.
He is.
Yeah, I love this for him.
Because he is also in The Color Purple. He plays a very thankless role.
Mm-hmm.
He's the dad.
Yeah.
But also, It's a complicated role because by the end, you're supposed to forgive him because he kind of like tries to make things right, even mm-hmm. though it's a lifetime of like abuse that he inflicts on people. So I'm intrigued to see. I haven't seen this new one, but I'm. People say he really pulls it off, and he's mm-hmm. a very talented actor.
Yes,
and I watched him on. I was watching him on a talk show, and he talked about how he like is hooked up with his Craigslist husband, thing? And yeah. it is very hot.
Yes, you should briefly tell the story.
Basically, he just like spots him across the street in like the 70s,
yeah.
and they both just immediately have an insane connection.
Was
like
it the 70s,
like it's early 80s, maybe.
No, what are you talking about? They're on Craigslist.
Well, yeah, but he sees him, and then they have a connection through the eyes, and then, wait.
What are you talking
you're
about?
Right. You're right. 90s? I don't know.
No, dude, it's like 20 years ago. It was like 2000.
90s? I don't know. Anyway, then he goes home, and he places a missed connections on Craigslist.
Yes.
And they spot each other
and they
again.
Find each other.
And they find each other.
And now they're married.
Yeah, he was going to place the missed connections, but then he saw his husband's.
Already had one.
Had already posted
right.
it.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is crazy. Like, that never happens.
Especially in the 70s, it's really crazy how that happened like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Time travel.
Those classified ads, right?
I mean, yeah, could have been.
Totally. Anyway, definitely watch Rustin. It's very good. I would like to see what this actor does next.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested to see what happens with this Color Purple situation.
Yeah, you need to watch it.
I think it's happening.
Oh yeah!
Like I think we're gonna see him. Like he's
blown up.
Some Nolan's gonna grab him, and he's.
Well, he was like, and he was just in that sort of like Vogue, like hottest six or whatever, just like actors on actress stuff.
How old is he?
He's well, don't ask me. You know, I just fudged the numbers.
He's 54. So
okay,
married his spouse in 2014.
But they met
the 70s of the
in the 80s. Okay. You know what? I don't need all this. Not from you guys.
Sorry, Sean.
No, I'm going to keep that pressure going.
Can I add two things about American Fiction that I
yes.
forgot to say?
Yes, please.
One, it looks divine. Like, there's a lot of beautiful visuals in this film.
Mm-hmm.
I was very struck by that. Two, I think it did a really good job at, like, exploring some of those tricky intersections, like I like the gender stuff that you were talking about with like the sister character, and then also some class stuff with their like longtime housekeeper,
the housekeeper
Tilly.
Yeah.
No, not Tilly. That was from the other film I watched. And just yeah, some like interesting intersectional stuff. Did you have one you wanted to talk about, or do you want?
I will just
one?
I can talk really briefly because I mentioned Waiting to Exhale earlier, and I watched it again this week because I haven't seen it in a long time. Love it. Directed by Forest Whitaker, Whitney Houston, Angela Bassett, Loretta Devine, and I love Loretta Devine in this.
Yeah.
And Layla Rashan. And it basically is just like a completely fantastical film of like four impossibly beautiful, rich, great wardrobe, great cars, great house. Even every man is impossibly beautiful, even the ones that do them wrong. And it is just like completely a fantastical film. But it's just a real warm hug.
Aww.
And also, it was notable at the time for a completely all-black cast, which I think was not the norm.
No.
Mm-mm.
And just like an underrated perspective of like a pretty kind of frothy rom-com-y
yeah.
type of thing, but
not just trauma and
yeah.
hardship.
Yeah, exactly. Like we're all ad execs at an ad agency or like TV producers or whatever, and just like normal people living normal damn lives.
Yeah.
And also Lee Daniels might adapt it for television.
Oh, I'm interested.
No, right? I'm wholly against that at this point.
But
were talking too about a sequel until Whitney passed, so that would have been great.
That would have been really cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's all I need to.
Yeah, I still need to watch. I still never.
It's so great. You would know of it from Angela Bassett's iconic scene of like throwing all of her husband's stuff out,
yeah.
and then lighting it on fire. That's a great.
I support women's rights, but more importantly, I support women's wrongs. And I've always said that.
You've always said that.
I've always said that. I had a bit of a similar journey to Jer, where I watched...
Journey to Jer, a memoir.
Where I watched a film and was like, oh, I've wanted to watch this for so long. I can't believe I've never watched this. And then as I was watching it, I was like, this is not a black film. Like, this is not black history. This is a white people learning about race in the most basic way.
Hold on, wait.
Yeah, are you going to guess?
Are we going to guess what it is?
Is it The Butler?
No, okay, it's not that bad. It's 1963's Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. 1967, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Which is like a...
Back when Craigslist was invented.
Yeah.
It is a, like, important film in the history
Craig had just finished school.
Yeah. Of Hollywood and race. But it is very... It still centers...
Mm-hmm.
White people and their anxieties and feelings
about having Sydney, Sydney in the room,
which is so wild. Also, like, obviously, racism is ridiculous and so silly and foolish and awful, but especially Sydney Poitier,
yeah,
to just be like he's everything you could want for your daughter. Anyway,
it's literally mind blowing at this point to think of it the way that it could have been thought of.
Well, and that's why I think it is important to watch these kinds of films. Just, I think it's also worth reflecting on the fact that I chose this for our Black History episode rather than something that black people actually made. But so if people don't know, it's from 1967. The premise is this young woman has gone to Hawaii and met this beautiful doctor played by Sydney Poitier and falls in love with him, and they decide to get married. And this is a point at which
over this one trip in Hawaii?
Yeah, it's literally like been 2 weeks and they're getting married, which is an interesting kind of piece of all of it, because it's like, I would actually be concerned if my child was like, I'm getting married.
I went on a vacation and now I'm married, yeah.
But that's not why they are upset. Interracial marriage had only just been like decriminalized federally in the United States quite recently when this came out. So it was very controversial. Like, it was literally still illegal at the state level in several places. And so basically she brings him home and announces to her parents she's getting married. And her parents are played by Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn. Iconic performances.
It's literally an all-star
so
study
good.
Cast.
And it's sort of them, basically they're like asking for their blessing. He has to go fly and do important doctor things in Switzerland. And he takes like Spencer Tracy aside and says, if I don't have your blessing, I will break it off. Because he knows how important her relationship to her parents is. So it's this kind of complex emotional thing, and then also kind of a comedy at times. It's an interesting interplay of like them figuring out how they feel about it, kind of coming to terms, all of them kind of like having side conversations with each other. And then she invites his parents to come, to fly in and come for dinner. And so that's kind of this added level of like the parents coming.
My gosh.
Yeah. But it's really good. Like, I think, I mean, Sydney Poitier is just like, he's so... I don't know. He's just so, you know, like he just has that like gravitas and grace, and he's just so, I don't know, enchanting.
He kind of exudes cool.
Yeah.
And like a part of that is upsetting because like that was maybe harnessed for evil at one point. But like he is just really cool.
He's really good. And what's wild is a bunch of them got Oscar nominations except for him. Which is just like, I mean, of course.
Yeah. Didn't you see Barbie?
Was he in that?
Oh my god, I was in Sydney Poitier. But yeah, it's one to watch, I think, to like kind of explore some of the history of that stuff.
Really quick.
Thanks.
I did rewatch Dolomite Is My Name.
Yeah.
Of course.
Because I've also rewatched Dolomite, both of which are just like pillars of, well, Dolomite is definitely a pillar of American filmmaking. Dolomite Is My Name is very fun, and if you like Eddie Murphy, you should watch it, because it does just chronicle Rudy Ray Moore's rise to fame, and it's really great.
Yeah. It is good.
I like it a lot.
Okay.
Really, I love a good movie about making movies.
Yes. It is a very fun... It's a very fun behind the scenes of them doing wackadoo things for that film. Okay. We have a funny amount of time left. Anyone have any...
The child and I went to see Wonka.
Oh, no.
Perhaps.
In Glasgow?
Perhaps because you guys turned it down so much, I thought it was pretty good.
We didn't turn it down.
Interesting.
It got turned. It got turned down. I will say...
Did we turn it down?
Oh, yeah, you did. There were four times in that movie where he was playing some crazy, weird character that I didn't understand. And then the rest of the time, Timothée did a pretty good job. I do think I agree with the child in that its rampant lack of Oompa Loompas is astonishing.
It's egregious.
She's right, and she should say it.
Yeah, like, you're going to show me Juan?
The saddest little one? Saddest little man?
Pardon? Lower than average height Oompa Loompa? Are you kidding? Are you kidding me? It was pretty good. I was actually like, oh, everyone's kind of just doing really well here. Like, that was just kind of my...
Did you get bored during the songs?
A few of them were a little long. I did appreciate a lot of the, like, made props and sets that they did.
Mm.
And, like, a lot of it was enchanting. So, like, he's singing his candy store for way too long. But, like, how'd they make that clown?
That's...
Yeah, child of the show, huge fan. We immediately went back and watched more Wonka stuff.
So. I think that might be the first time we have heard a specific opinion from Child of the Show on the show.
I was
going to
say, maybe she should have
heard,
little...
You've heard other opinions.
Well,
for sure.
Well, we've heard she that like, she likes something or not, but yeah. I think that's the first like, critique.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. Anyway, okay. Yeah.
It was a Rory critique.
A Wonka time. Anyway.
Well, thank you for that, Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
Well... Why don't we just wrap it up? We'd like to thank Saskatoon's The Garys for letting us use their song Manitouna for our theme song. We'd like to thank everyone here at CJTR and all of you at home for letting us your ears. We're broadcast Wednesdays at 6, Fridays at 3, and are available as a podcast on Spotify, Apple Play, and everywhere else podcasts are played. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, so give us a follow. And have a good night.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.